of a court case and got the gypsies out of town.
That's usually how it works, isn't it? Billy asked. His face was suddenly hot and burning. He was somehow quite sure that the man who had been arrested in Attleboro was the same young man who had been juggling the bowling pins on the Fairview Town Common.
Yes, pretty much, Pensley agreed. The gypsies know the scoop. Once the fellow is gone, the local cops are happy. There's no APB, no manhunt. It's like getting a fleck of dirt in your eye. That fleck of dirt is all one can think about. Then the eye waters and washes it out. And once it's gone and the pain stops, one doesn't care where that fleck of dirt went, does one?
A fleck of dirt, Billy said. Is that what he was?
To the Attleboro police, that's exactly what he was. Do you want the rest of this now, Bill? Or shall we moralize on the plight of various minority groups for a bit first?
Give me the rest, please.
The gypsies stopped again in Lincoln, Mass. They lasted just about 3 days before getting the boot.
The same group every time, you're sure?
Yes, always the same vehicles. There's a list here with registrations, mostly Texas and Delaware tags. You want the list?
Eventually, not now. Go on.
There wasn't much more. The gypsies had shown up in Revere, just north of Boston, had stayed 10 days, and moved on of their own accord. 4 days in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and then they had simply dropped out of sight.
We can pick up their scent again if you want, Pensley said. We're less than a week behind now. There are 3 first-class investigators from Barton Detective Services on this, and they think the gypsies are almost certainly somewhere in Maine by now. They've paralleled I-95 all the way up the coast from Connecticut. Hell, all the way up the coast from at least the Carolinas, from what the Greeley men were able to find of their back trail. It's almost like a circus tour. They'll probably work the southern Maine tourist areas like Ogunquit and Kennebunkport, work their way up to Booth Bay Harbor and finish at Bar Harbor. Then, when the tourist season starts to run out, they'll head back down to Florida, the Texas Gulf Coast, for the winter.
Is there an old man with them? Billy asked. He was gripping the phone very tightly.
About 80, with a horrible nose condition, sore, cancer, something like that.
A sound of riffling papers that seemed to go on forever. Then,
Tadus Lemke, Pensley said calmly. The father of the woman you struck with your car, yes, he's with them.
Father? Halleck barked.
That's impossible. Kirk, the woman was old, around 70, 75.
Tadus Lemke is 106. For several moments, Billy found it impossible to speak at all. His lips moved, but that was all. He looked like a man kissing a ghost. Then he managed to repeat, "That's impossible."
"An age we all could certainly envy," Kirk Pensley said, "but not at all impossible. There are records on all of these people, you know. They're not wandering around Eastern Europe in caravans anymore, although I imagine some of the older ones, like this fellow Lemke, wish they were. I've got pics for you. Social Security numbers, fingerprints if you want them. Lemke has variously claimed his age to be 106, 108, and 120. I choose to believe 106 because it jibes with the Social Security information that Barton operatives were able to obtain. Susanna Lemke was his daughter, all right, no doubt at all about that. And for whatever it's worth, he's listed as president of the Tadus Company on the various gaming permits they've had to obtain, which means he's the head of the tribe or the band or whatever they call themselves.
His daughter? Lemke's daughter? In Billy's mind, it seemed to change everything. Suppose someone had struck Linda. Suppose it had been Linda run down in the street like a mongrel dog.
It down?
Huh?
He tried to bring his mind back to Kirk Pinchley. I said, are you sure you don't want us to close this down? It's costing you, Bill.
Please ask them to push on a little further, Billy said. I'll call you in 4 days, no, 3, and find out if you located them.
You don't need to do that, Pinchley said. If, when, the Barton people locate them, you'll be the first to know.
I won't be here, Halleck said slowly.
Oh.
Pensley's voice was carefully noncommittal.
Where do you expect to be?
Traveling, Halleck said, and hung up shortly afterward. He sat perfectly still, his mind confused whirl, his fingers, his very thin fingers, drumming uneasily on the edge of his desk.
Heidi went out the next day, just after 10, to do some shopping. She did not look in on Billy to tell him where she was going or when she would be back. That old and amiable habit was no more. Billy sat in his study watching the Olds back down the driveway to the street. For just a moment, Heidi's head turned, and their eyes seemed to meet. His, confused and scared, hers, dumbly accusing. "You've made me send our daughter away. You won't get the professional help you need. Our friends are starting to talk. You seem to want someone to co-pilot you over into ha-ha land, and I'm elected. Well, fuck you, Billy Halleck. Leave me alone. Burn if you want to, but you've got no right to ask me to join you in the pot." Just an illusion, of course. She couldn't see him far back in the shadows. Just an illusion. But it hurt. After the Olds had disappeared down the street, Billy ran a piece of paper into his Olivetti and wrote, "Dear Heidi," at the top. It was the only part of the letter that came easily. He wrote it one painful sentence at a time, always thinking in the back of his mind that she would come back in while he was pecking it out. But she did not. He finally pulled the note from the typewriter and read it over. "Dear Heidi, by the time you read this, I'll be gone. I don't know exactly where, and I don't know exactly for how long, but I hope that when I come back, all of this will be over. The nightmare we've been living with. Heidi, Michael Houston is wrong, wrong about everything. Lita Rossington really did tell me that the old gypsy, his name is Tadus Lemke, by the way, touched Carrie, and she really did tell me that Carrie's skin was plating, and Duncan Hopley really was covered with pimples. It was more horrible than you can imagine. Houston refuses to allow himself any serious examination of the chain of logic I've presented in defense of my belief, and he certainly refused to combine that chain of logic with the inexplicability of what's happening to me. 155 this morning, almost 100 pounds now. He cannot do these things. It would knock him out entirely of his orbit if he did. He would rather see me committed for the rest of my life than to even seriously entertain the possibility that all of this is happening as a result of a gypsy's curse. The idea that such off-the-wall things as gypsy curses exist at all, anywhere in the world, but especially in Fairview, Connecticut, is anathema to everything Michael Houston has ever believed in. His gods come out of bottles.